Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and this is Schubert's Sonata, and we are playing that with you to honor the birth of Schubert on this day. And we are here now talking to Senator Mary Chappelle Nadal, who is a state senator for St. Louis County District 14 and has been on the ground in the protests in Ferguson from the beginning. Welcome. Good to have you with us, Senator, once again.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org. Log on to my Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. And from the Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, here a little early for his appearance, but nevertheless, he's in the studio with Adam Jackson. I've asked him to jump in with any questions he might have as well for the senator. So, Senator, you know, we're all been, everybody in this country, let me take that back. Many people in this country are very anxious on the edge of their seats about this ruling coming down from the grand jury about whether or not Darren Wilson, the officer who killed Michael Brown, will be indicted. So first question is, what's the politics around this? What are we know and don't know about why it's taking so long for the announcement from the grand jury?
Well, I have to tell you, from the very beginning, this case has been treated very differently than any other case from the prosecuting attorney's office. So from day one, Bob McCullough said that he was going to give all of the evidence to the grand jury. That is different than how he has treated other cases. He stated from the very beginning that this could take a long while. He started off by saying in late October, November, and then you remember the announcement, it could be in January. I do know that the grand jury is looking into as much information as possible. They are actually asking for more people to come in to testify as witnesses to answer some questions. And I think that actually is a good move on their behalf. You have to have 9 people out of 12 on that grand jury to say that there should be an indictment. That means if there are only 7, there is no indictment. And so I just really hope that all of the information and the questions have been answered for that grand jury. But people are on edge, and you can feel it in the air. There's a lot of angst. There's a lot of fear. I think there is a certain level of excessive behavior on the part of some of our leadership, including our governor, who has called for the National Guard, and also did a state of emergency, and there is no emergency. So the way that people are being treated in my district right now, at least by the governor, is unfortunate. I mean, the way that I explained it yesterday, we're being treated as if we're insurgents or militants in Afghanistan, and we're simply American-born citizens who want to exercise our First Amendment rights. And we are not violent at all. There are outsiders who are agitators who are trying to make things worse for people who peacefully want to protest and demonstrate why it is important to have equality across the board. And that's simply the message that our governor hasn't gotten yet. He's reacting to the protests instead of responding to why are people on the ground so angry? Why do they feel these hurt feelings every single day?
You know, when you talk about a response like Afghanistan, I'm curious also politically from your perspective and from your constituents and others, what the response is to Governor Nixon of Missouri calling in the National Guard in a state of emergency before anything has happened.
Well, you know, again, it's just reflective and indicative to how he has treated and handled the African-American community from the very beginning in his service. He's never really understood the African-American community. When he gave his announcement last week, he had a very strong voice and a very strong tone, as if we on the ground were going to pay attention to his strong voice. He was speaking as if he were a father talking to his children, but what he doesn't realize that he doesn't have a lot of respect from this community. So any authoritative tone is really basically laughed at. And not taken well whatsoever. So he's just demonstrated a lack of understanding and sensitivity and zero compassion from day one. And I think it's just reflective of how prejudice is in state government, in our state party, which I belong to, and also in institutional racism in some police departments across the state.
You know, it makes me think, it makes me realize that places like Missouri and certain parts of Missouri, like here where we're broadcasting from, in Maryland, we have a section of our state called the Eastern Shore. And because they didn't have the attention Mississippi, Alabama, and other places had, it's almost as if that overt, there's a lot of covert stuff going on around America, but that overt patriarchal racist system is in place.
That is true. It really is. And you know what? I have to tell you, from the very beginning in my service 10 years ago, I used to say that I represent Paradise Island surrounded by a sea of feeding sharks. Mm. And it just so turns out that the sharks are a lot closer than what I ever imagined. We are very, you know, in many ways progressive. We're very liberal. But because of the institutional racism that has been swept under the rug for decades, people didn't recognize it. And because of that, many of my constituents, I mean, talk about a sociological study or psychological study on how people are feeling, the temperaments of people in this community. And if you're a young person, especially a black male, you know that you're going to be stopped, even though you may have not been doing anything at all. You could be walking down the street. You know that you're probably going to be arrested for no good reason. You know that you're going to be excessively ticketed, and you know that you're probably going to lose your job because some police officers have decided to target you because you are black and you are a male. The same thing happens to young ladies at the same time. But, you know, there is a problem, and I have to just tell your audience, I'm not going to stop. There are a lot of people in the rank and file of my party who want me to stop talking about the reality and the condition of this community, and I simply am not going to do it because people are hurting, and they're hurting terribly. They're so strong in their feelings because they see themselves as Michael Brown. At any given time, any given day, that is themselves. It just depends on where they are, if it's the right time, wrong place. They are trying to figure out, you know, how is our government going to respond to this type of institutional racism? And there's a cover-up in many ways. I mean, there was no police report. You know, you have this person walking around free, and you have all these demonstrations on his side. It what's interesting, let me tell you what's ironic. Ironically, we have an open carry law, and you can have protests with you know, many Caucasians who have their guns, and they're showing them, displaying them openly. But you get an African-American who has a carry and conceal gun permit and a gun, and then they get arrested, and their gun is taken away from them. It's a tale of two cities. You know, any person, because we have the right to carry in the state of Missouri, I should not be looked at differently as someone who holds a gun, who has a permit for a gun, and then get arrested for it, when someone who's Caucasian and has every similarity as I do, but Caucasian, and they're just fine with it. They don't get arrested. They don't get intimidated. It's really reflective of the state that we're in Missouri. And I say Missouri because that's the old way of saying
that's
it.
That's right.
It's Missouri, but my grandmother would say it's the state of misery. And right now, the people in the 14th Senatorial District are living in the state of misery, and the governor of the state of misery is Governor Jay Nixon.
So a quick question here, and I'm going to let my dear friend and colleague Adam Jackson, who's in the studio, if he has a question, jump in real fast where we have to move to our roundtable. But what is your sense on the ground with the young people who have organized this movement? Because one of the beautiful things we've learned about Ferguson and talking to many of the young people in that movement is that this really is a young people's movement, and they're moving ahead.
It's beautiful, and it's been that way from day one, and they were trying to articulate themselves from the very beginning. I was just looking at pictures of our sit-in on the street from day one, and we had members of the clergy who were trying to get the young folks out of the street, and I was that person standing in the gap and said, let them demonstrate the way that they want to demonstrate. I look back at 1964 and 65 and race politics in St. Louis, and there were a lot more organized events at that point. And I'm looking at the young people now and the way that they've organized themselves, the way they're communicating themselves and showing that they are peaceful people is such a beautiful sight. It really is. I mean, how often do you see rival gang members put their rivalries aside and we're not going to be part of this gang anymore. We're going to stand up and fight for justice because we want to continue to live. At the very beginning, I had young folks who were willing to die, and I was holding them back. I've held crying grown men who wanted to demonstrate, and then the governor gave a curfew, and then they gave a 5-second rule, both of which are unconstitutional. And just to see this change on people who have been kind of on the edge of society, turn their lives around for justice is remarkable. There are people who are they're felons. There's one guy in particular who just got out of jail after 14 years in February, and he's in this movement and fighting for justice in a very peaceful way. I mean, just seeing the change in the hearts and minds of the young people is an incredible feeling. It's an incredible sight to see.
Well, I want to thank you, Senator. Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal. Did I say your last name correctly? Nadal? Is that right? You say Nadal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Nadal.
Good. I'll make sure I have it right. Who's a state senator for St. Louis County, District 14, has been on the ground with her constituents in the protests in Ferguson since. We're checking in with her once again. And as soon as the decision comes down from the grand jury, we'll be going back to the senator and others in Ferguson and cover this as we have been doing. And, Senator, thank you so much for all the work you do and for standing up so courageously, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
Take care. So we're going to take a very brief break and come back. As we go to break, we're hearing Tommy Dorsey's Marie, the bandleader, trombonist, and brother of bandleader Jimmy Dorsey, was born on this day in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania. Stay with us. We'll be right back.